Scientists on board the research vessel, the Nautilus, sought refuge from Tropical Storm Olivia in South Point on the Big Island. We talked to geologist Chris German about the unexpected opportunity to collect data in between storms and during a lull of the volcano.
We had a program that was already funded to come and study the Lo'ihi Seamount, which is the next volcano south from the Big Island. So that's what we were scheduled to be doing this summer. And then, of course, when the Kilauea eruption happened and we had the ocean entry from the Lower East Rift Zone, then we took the opportunity while we were here to redirect our final dive to go and do a first exploration of the delta, the underwater volcano delta. So I think the two main things we were impressed by, one was how much sediment there was already on top of the fresh lava flows. So the lavas date from mid-May and up through mid-August, but they're already covered with a lot of sediment, which, of course, is because of all that rain you had on the Big Island during the second half of August when Hurricane Lane came by. Or it's Tropical Storm Lane, I guess. But that 50 inches of rain washed a lot of material. Do you remember how, like, all the rivers flooded and turned brown with sediment?
Yes.
And all that stuff had to go somewhere. So at first we thought, these can't be the fresh lavas we thought we were seeing. And then we realized, well, we're only 500 meters offshore. We can see the volcanic still steaming from yesterday morning's rain showers. So there's no doubt we were in, like, our robot was at 500 meters and 500 meters offshore, diving at the seafloor, so all that sediment had to be young, even compared to August.
Interesting.
But then we actually managed to find, in amongst the sediment, we found fresh lava flows as well. And as we were following up those, so we had the same kind of RR flows that we've had on land, extending for about a kilometer offshore and down to 750 meters deep. And as we were following up those, we actually found little areas that were carpeted with little breaks in the lava flow that were populated with bright yellowy-orange microbial mat. So they'd been colonized in a matter of weeks, and there was still some warm water flowing out. So basically, as the it was exactly what I was hoping for, but probably I'm pinching myself that I didn't dare expect it, that when the lava flow entered the ocean, it carried some heat with it that was able to cook up the seawater and distill out nutrients from the fresh lavas. And somehow microbes have then managed to exploit that available energy from those chemicals and use that for food to actually grow a whole new population of microbes that had already colonized those lava flows that are probably, what, something like 100 days old.
So really, then, lots of new life.
Yeah, it's like admittedly, the discoveries are less than 24 hours old, so it's all kind of new. But right now, my working hypothesis is this must be like the underwater equivalent of a desert bloom. You know how, like, if it rains in the desert, there's all kinds of spores that are lying dormant, and all the plants come to life, and they last for a short period, and then they all go dormant again, and they wait for the next rains. And somehow the ocean must function in the same way, that there's microbes around ready to take an opportunity. So as soon as an ocean entry happens around Hawaii, and we know they've happened in the past, right? This isn't the only one that's ever happened, where I can see one out the window right now along the Kona coast on the southwest of the Big Island, from past eruptions. So the question now is, does this happen every time, and how long do they last? So we have one first observation right at the end of this cruise, and we're blown out of the water again now with the next storm. But hopefully we can come back in future months and years and see how this system evolves now that we've got our something close to time zero analysis from yesterday.
Right, it's your baseline.
Exactly so. That's why I was really determined we got that one dive in before the end of this expedition. So fortunately, the gods kept the storms at bay just long enough. So thanks will be going out to Pele later today.
So it's pretty exciting, though, for a scientist.
Oh, it's extraordinarily so, yeah. It's an absolute rare and a very happy privilege for us to be here at this time. I mean, I know volcanic eruptions cause all kinds of problems for people on land that are caught up in the negative side of it. But the other side of that coin is that the fact that we were here planning to do other science and then this opportunity arose is a bonus prize for us. And especially so because this program isn't just one that's in pursuit of ocean exploration here on Earth, but it's also co-funded by NASA, and we're trying to help, as well as NOAA and the Ocean Exploration Trust, that we're trying to use our observations to help inform how people might explore other oceans on other planets. So this is part of the rich portfolio of stuff on our own planet. And there's no reason why, you know, we expect that underwater volcanoes might occur on other ocean worlds as well. So having this first new insight into what happens right after an eruption reaches the ocean is an incredibly valuable experience for all concerned.
Now, your team is from Woods Hole. That's an awful long, you know, awful far away.
Well, we're actually a team from all over the place, to be honest. So I'm the lead scientist, and I'm from Woods Hole, but we actually have colleagues from in the science team from the University of Texas, Rio Grande Valley, about as far south as you can go in East Texas before you get to the Mexico border. But we also have colleagues from Arizona State University as well, who spend more of their time thinking about planetary science. But then on top of that, we also have collaborators from NASA's Ames Research Center who are thinking, studying how we actually do our research, because they don't just want to learn, or NASA doesn't just want to learn from the ocean science that I'm doing. They also want to understand how we've been using telepresence to direct operations from shore. So we also have a team from Idaho State University as well. There's the final laboratory address. And they've been doing a lot of work already with NASA Ames doing work on land, on the Big Island. And so they've now collaborated with us to actually get ourselves offshore and see what we can learn both about the science and how we conduct our research in a remote location in the ocean.
And the Nautilus staff, though, I mean, they're mainly from Woods Hole, right, from that area?
The Nautilus?
Yes.
Yeah, the basically it's part of the Ocean Exploration Trust, which is actually based at the University of Rhode Island's Ocean Campus at the Graduate School of Oceanography, or it's coincident with that, in Narragansett in Rhode Island. So the next state over, but
I see.
It's about 70 miles away. They're near enough near neighbors.
Yeah, the other coast.
When you're communicating at the speed of light, it's pretty much the same place. When we talk to them from the ship, they are seeing our collaborators, the people who have been running our research program with us. They've been looking at the same video as us in real time and talking to us, and there's less than a two-second delay between when we see what's happening at the seafloor and when they see it.
Okay, but your team is all the way over, based over there, over on the Atlantic. We're here in the Pacific.
Yeah.
So what's the plan? Uh-huh. How long will you stay out here?
We are just about wrapped up. Yesterday was the last day of our expedition. We started August 20th. So technically, if it hadn't been for the fourth of the hurricanes that has impacted us since we've been here, we got out on August 20th to Honolulu, and we were meant to sail that week, but we ended up waiting for Lane to go through, and then while we were out at sea, we had the next system, which never actually got close to Hawaii, but stirred up the ocean, that made us run for cover, and then we had Norman that made us run for cover a third time, and then today we might have just managed one more dive before we headed for port.
Okay, and the vessel, when does it go back to the Atlantic?
The vessel is staying here, and it's going back out for another expedition right after this, going to the chain of seamounts north of here. So Chris Kelly from NOAA
right.
will be leading one more expedition this season. So that's heading back out as soon as it can. We're a day late coming into port, so he may be a day late, but I should think by the weekend he'll be back out at sea. And then that's the last expedition of the season, and then the ship's going to be heading back to the Pacific. Across the Pacific, but it's going to be based on the West Coast.
Okay, I was thinking maybe you'd get a chance to go back out there one more time to Kona, but sounds like not.
I suspect we're not going to manage that this trip, but we have plenty of colleagues at the University of Hawaii. We're already booked up to be meeting up with them when we get into port later this week. And so this isn't the only ship in the ocean.
Right.
So there'll be plenty of opportunities for us to share our results and see whether we can't collaborate with them and load them up with all the information we've got, so that even if it's not me and not my team specifically and this ship specifically, we can still get people back to the Delta and following up on the discoveries we've just made.
Right, so it's the sharing among the scientists.
Exactly. It's a big ocean and there's not many of us to go around, so we share all the information we can as best we can, and we're not greedy.
But your takeaway is you're pretty excited at what you've been able to glean just from this unexpected trip.
Yes. Yep, just getting in as quickly as we could. When we were first coming out here, we were discussing whether or not we could come and do this work. And at the time, when we first asked, it wasn't safe to actually operate where we were operating yesterday. All the while the ocean entry was still happening and the explosive volcanism was happening, it wouldn't have been possible to bring the ship so close into shore. So at the seafloor, it's like a half-glass empty story that we arrived. There's fascinating stuff there, and it would have been fascinating to be there a month ago. If we could have, you know, but that wasn't possible anyway.
Right.
So logistically, it couldn't have happened. But even if we'd had the ship and the robots here, I would have had to stand offshore and be even more frustrated, because it just wouldn't have been safe to take people and the ship and put ourselves in harm's way.
Right. So, anything else that you think is significant to note from what you folks were able to see?
No, I think just, you know, the surprise is the rapidity with which the seafloor has been colonized right after such a what seemed like a hostile environment. On land, I took photographs on land to compare and contrast, and the lava looks pretty barren. And yesterday morning when the sun was coming up, but there were plenty of thick clouds, it looked a pretty desolate and ominous place. And then under the water was this rich and vibrant microbial community. So it was like a world of two halves, above and below sea level.
That was Chris German, a researcher with the Woods Hole Oceanic Institute, talking about exploring the new undersea land formed by Kilauea's latest eruption.